Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
School of Humans.
This show follows the investigation of serial murders and contains material that may be disturbing. Listener discretion advised.
In May of 2018, the case against Cecilia Stein and Alectus Perdeus was moved from district to high court. Since the group's arrest in 2016, nearly 2 years had gone by. In that time, Ben Boysen had to reassemble case files from 6 years prior and piece together all that had happened since 2012 in order to connect EPD to the murders and get them convicted. Back in 2016, John Barnard turned state's witness. He'd agreed to testify against EPD, which got him out of a life sentence. He would serve 20 years. LaRue was also now officially a witness for the state. His testimony against Cecilia, his mother, and Zach Valentine is how the prosecution tied EPD to the 2012 murders. LaRue and John Barnard's statements, paired with all the evidence gathered by Detectives Suzette Canoze and Captain Johan Van Vick, made EPD's involvement plausible beyond a reasonable doubt. Not to mention the guns in Marinda's classroom and the blood found on her carpet. Blood later discovered to be that of Anthony Schofield. Psychologist Rosalind McNabb was hired by the state to advocate for Marcel, who was underage when the crimes were committed. Like all those who heard Marinda's accounts of the murders, McNabb recalls being deeply disturbed.
On the stand, she lied blatantly to save Cecilia. I killed Reginald, and I enjoyed every minute of it. I did it because I wanted to, and I wanted to feel the power, and went into great gory detail about how she did it and saying it had nothing to do with Cecilia.
Marinda Stein was served 11 life sentences and 115 years for 11 murders. The 2 years that LaRue spent behind bars provided him ample time to consider the sting of his mother's betrayal, her many betrayals, but especially the altering of her will. On the stand, Marinda claimed she was the mastermind behind all the murders and implicated LaRue and Zach in her statements. She excluded Cecilia and Marcel from this testimony in a rare act of motherly love. For his testimony, LaRue was offered a reduced sentence of 25 years. Ben Boysen remembers the verdict against LaRue.
LaRue cried when he was found guilty. And in front of his mother, he said, "Thank you, Captain, for sending this bitch to jail," and pointing at his mother. So, yeah, I think at that stage, he made peace with himself that his mother actually forced him to commit murder.
Cecilia, Zach, and Marcel all pleaded not guilty. Cecilia, to this day, claims she knew nothing
and had nothing to do with the murders. She told me herself when I spoke to her in prison.
No one can force you to do anything. There's no such thing as the devil made me do it. There's no such thing as God made me do it. We make our own choices. We act on our own impulses. And Marshall and LaRue has the reasons they did what they did. And yeah, there's nothing anybody can say to change someone else's mind.
From School of Humans and iHeart Podcasts, this is Queen Havoc and her murder cult. I'm your host, Kurt Kubicek. Episode 10, Court for the Queen. In 2018, the year following the initial sentencing of Marinda and LaRue, the state called 52 out of about 200 witnesses to testify against three members of Electus Perdeus.
The three that eventually went to trial was Cecilia, Zach, and Marcel.
Ben told us about how he had to be careful when choosing who to call to the stand. Anyone who believed Cecilia had ties to Satanism could have confused the judge. Way back in the first episode, we talked about how the judicial system does take Satanism seriously. But as we now know, her satanic past was nothing but a tool Cecilia used to convince her followers to commit these horrendous crimes. Any connection to the devil was contrived, with no bearing on the murders themselves.
At the end of the day, what is the judge going to believe and what he's not going to believe? You understand? So we needed to choose our witnesses to prove our case and not to damage our case.
Even so, considering all that EPD had gotten away with up to this point, faith in the judicial system was hard to come by.
Even when we started going to court, there was doubt in the family's eyes that these people eventually going to be found guilty.
Jana Marks, working as a courtroom journalist at the time, was used to watching trials. Jana kept a keen eye on all the witnesses' behavior and body language. She noticed that Cecilia appeared completely unfazed by the proceedings. She, Zach, and Marcel, at least at first, stuck together, like a little clique, hiding behind their witty rapport.
They started as a very chatty group. A lot of fun and games. Cecilia is very, you know, she's very lively and she tells jokes. And that happened in court. They sat and they made little personal jokes and they pointed and stared at people. And that's how it started.
One of the key witnesses they mocked was Rhea Grunewald, EPD's first victim, at least in a psychological sense, and Cecilia's apparent motivation for the revenge killings in 2012. It took weeks for state prosecutors and police to convince Rhea to come out of hiding and appear in court. She did so only under the condition that no photographs be taken of her. Her testimony brought her into the same room as Cecilia and EPD for the first time in 5 years. Jana reported that Rhea addressed the room, stating, "Rhea Grunewald is dead. She no longer exists. I've lost everything. When they died, I died." Rhea's written testimony read,
"It was a very difficult time, and I was not able to discuss it with anyone. Fearing that C could be punished for speaking out, I had to be strong for her. She also isolated me from everyone I knew. She lied about everything. I couldn't do anything without them knowing. I believed her. I then decided to end my commitment to C, and I set up that appointment with her where I was threatened. The rest is history."
With 11 others killed, Rhea managed to escape from the vortex of Cecilia Stein with her life. However, she is still paying a high price. Rhea lost her home, her livelihood. She lost contact with her children and the rest of her family. Existence as she knew it ceased. It's like her life was murdered, but she went on living.
She didn't even admit to me where she went to stay. Till today, her children don't speak to her.
Her grandchildren don't see her, so she's still in hiding today somewhere in South Africa.
Some of the witnesses that took the stand included members of Cecilia's outer circle, folks involved in the Know Your Enemy classes she held for a time back in 2012. Neighbors of the murder victims and members of the task team also testified. Here's Detective Hurt Kruger.
There was the witness. They were having a party next to the house where Mr. McGregor was staying. They said there was a white female who had a very funny, she was walking funny. They described it like almost like walking like a duck, and that was Miranda.
Even Luke came out of witness protection to testify against them and report on his chilling time around the group. As Cecilia, Zach, and Marcel witnessed their damning testimony, they became increasingly less chummy. Their body language began to reflect the degradation of Cecilia's mind control.
As more testimony came forward, more evidence came forward, it's as if the group literally physically moved away from one another on the bench.
The more Cecilia allowed everyone else to take the blame for her, the more Zach and Marcel recoiled.
Cecilia would sit in the middle, still just, you know, observing, writing. She took notes.
That's right. Cecilia took notes. She had to keep her story straight.
And you have Zach Valentine. Zach would literally sit on one butt cheek. Like he's going to fall off the bench at any moment. He was so far away just to stay away from her and Marcel, the same on the other side.
Marcel was in a dark place throughout the proceedings. Each time she was called to the stand, she denied everything, which implicated her brother and made way for her mother to continue to sacrifice her own life in exaltation of Cecilia.
So Marcel obviously grew more and more depressed as she realized, okay, well, Cecilia set up the whole trial, she planned the whole trial in advance, and Marcel went with it.
Ben tried talking to Marcel, but she was reluctant, even to the point of self-sabotage.
Marcel, from the beginning, told me to go fuck myself. That was her words. A father, a real father, arranged the lawyers, a good advocate, and she said no, she doesn't want it. The father must fuck off and the lawyer must fuck off, and she's not guilty.
Remember, the primary charge was racketeering. This was used as a pathway to prove their involvement in the murders. This risky and unprecedented strategy turned out to be a clever move on Ben's part.
This is the first case in the history of South Africa where murderers are charged with racketeering and was found guilty in the High Court.
So, even though each EPD defendant had their own lawyers, allegations against one implicated them all.
As the trial progressed, and obviously they had their own legal representatives, and every legal counsel obviously wants to exonerate their own client, and they would throw the others under the bus.
Zach held fast to the story that he didn't remember anything, even the day that his car caught on fire. But Miranda, describing his direct involvement while on the stand, revealed suspicious inconsistencies in the narrative. This prolonged the trial. Over the course of 3 years, from 2016 through 2019, Alectus Perdeas only spent a total of 60 days in court, but prosecutors were relentless in their pursuit of the truth. The most critical testimonies, though, were the ones given by LaRue and Barnard. Again, Jana Marks noted LaRue's physical and emotive language.
LaRue, not a small boy coming into court, but he grew more confident during his testimony. I remember him not being able to say the word murder or killing.
He had been brainwashed and pressured by his own mother and Cecilia since he was just a kid.
I think the first two, 3 days of his testimony, he will just say, yeah, and then it happened. Then that happened. Assuming a murder, or then I will strangle the guy and then it happened. So it was very interesting to see how he evolved during his testimony. I think getting, like, freeing himself from the bondage of his mother, the bondage of Cecilia being in their service.
LaRue's striking neck tattoo of a large marionette puppet
took on a symbolic new meaning throughout the course of the trial. As he found his footing in court, LaRue's confidence may have been boosted by his budding friendship with journalist Maritska Kotzer. LaRue confided in Maritska about all the ways he was abused by his mother and Cecilia.
His mother beat him up because how dare he question Cecilia, you know? And it's really sad. He said to me the one time his mother hit him more than 30 times. She hit him so hard he wet his pants. And this was when he was 16 years old.
Even behind bars, LaRue feared Cecilia's spectral wrath.
There's actually one time where he was in jail. He's been sentenced. Where he asked me about astro travel. He actually genuinely asked me if I thought it was real and do I think Cecilia can get to him and harm him. And I'm like, LaRue, you know this is a bunch of shit. Come on now. But it just shows you how long he's been manipulated. You know, sitting in jail, he's like, what if Cecilia can sneak into my cell and come and hurt me, you know?
What the public didn't know, however, was that Maritska and LaRue's relationship had evolved from journalist and suspect to a friendship, and then to a fully-fledged romance. One that lasted for 2.5 years. They were already an item before LaRue was even officially sentenced in 2018.
He asked me the day before he was sentenced, will I be his girlfriend? And at that point, you know, I kind of like froze because like half of me thought, what's the harm of being someone's girlfriend in jail? I'll never get involved like that. And the other half of me felt sorry for him, you know, like how can I say no now, knowing that tomorrow he's getting sentenced for, let's say, 20 or 25 years. So, you know, and I just said yes, you know, but I did like him. I had a crush on him. But can you now imagine the first day that this is now my boyfriend, I'm standing in court looking at how he's being sentenced. That was really a very sad, you know, moment.
Maritska was married at the time, and the couple had a young daughter. By 2019, with the case mounting against Cecilia, Zach, and Marcel, Zach got wind of their relationship and tried to use it to his advantage.
Zach was the only one that had a private attorney. Everyone else had state attorneys. Zach's parents paid that lawyer over 2 million rand just to, you know, help him get away with murder. So one of their plans was to get me subpoena to tell the court that the police was using me.
Zach's attorney aimed to get LaRue's testimony stricken from the record. He argued that Maritska was working with Ben and the task team to influence LaRue's story. While Maritska's behavior is indeed a breach of journalistic ethics, Zach's attempt to leverage her and LaRue's love for his own gain caught her off guard.
I've never in my life lived a story like this, like the drama. The one day I'm sitting there and the investigating officer phones me and he's like, listen, yeah, I don't want to scare you, but you might be called to court. I'm like, for fucking what? You know, because I'm covering this. He's like, no. Yeah, Zach's attorney is trying to say that the police is using me to manipulate LaRue.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Early in 2019, in a desperate act of self-preservation, Zach Valentine and his lawyer tried to sell the story that Maritska was a pawn used by the police to convince LaRue to stay on his confessional track. If this were true, it would discredit LaRue's testimony and further complicate the case against EPD. Maritska fought to stay off the stand.
I'm like a hell to the no, because now, can you now imagine? I need to appear in court. I'm a journalist. Now I need to go explain. So I was like, this shit is not going down, you know?
The judge recognized that there were more important issues at stake than an accused killer's girlfriend and rejected the request from Zach's attorney.
And luckily, the judge threw it out. So I was like, phew, I dodged the bullet, okay? But little did I know, I did not dodge a bullet. The whole, I don't know, like 9 yards were coming for me.
But Zach and his lawyer didn't quit.
After that failed, Zach's girlfriend went to a Sunday newspaper. So it's basically the place where I worked, the sister publication.
Can we pause? Are you telling me Zach had a girlfriend?
It was actually his fiance. How can that woman date Zach? Isn't she scared he's going to murder her as well? Okay, but anyways, back to how I saw my ass, okay?
That same week, Maritska's life began to crumble.
When I arrived at work, my boss phoned me. And she said to me, yo, from this point on, I'm not allowed to speak to anyone anymore. I'm not allowed to speak to my colleagues. I'm not allowed to go out on stories.
By the end of the week, she lost her job.
By the Friday that I arrived at work, as I got to the entrance, the HR lady was waiting there for me. I didn't even enter that building. They took my laptop, they took my access card, and they suspended me.
Although her marriage had been falling apart for a while, she was still living in the house she shared with her husband and their young daughter.
I'm a married woman, so now I'm phoning my husband, then my favorite police contact, right? I messaged her, I said to her, listen, yeah, Colonel, I need to tell you something. And then she said to me, yes, she saw online. I'm like, what? So while I was driving home, they already put out a press release saying that I've been suspended in connection with the murders.
Maritska could be charged with obstruction of justice in connection with 11 murders. Serious charges.
So now you must know, like, everyone, like, suspects what's going on here. But that's still nothing, okay? So this is the Friday. Sunday morning, I wake up. I wake up not only to the news of my affair everywhere, but I mean on the lamp poles.
Maritska's face next to a picture of LaRue, the murderer, plastered all over Krugersdorp on the lampposts.
It says, journalist, madly in love with jailbird. That was the craziest feeling in the world, you know, like becoming the front page story.
It often feels like we could dedicate an entire podcast to just one of the many subplots orbiting around Cecilia and EPD. This is certainly one of those times. LaRue and Maritska's relationship would survive this. In fact, it would last until the COVID-19 lockdown in 2020. Maritska's insight into LaRue, however biased, did help us to understand him as a person in a big way. She shared with us many of the details of their relationship, introducing a side to LaRue that we hadn't seen before. A young man with a big heart. A human being desiring a relationship, the comfort of a partner, something he'd never had before. She also told us that he was experiencing a new level of paranoia in prison. He could not shake the profound fear that had been nurtured and reinforced in him for years. Maritska, looking at this some 3 years later, was insightful as she reflected on how we all build walls around ourselves, cult or no cult.
And I remember the one day arriving at home, and as I stopped in front of the gate, I thought to myself, everyone has their own prisons. You know, and as I opened that gate, I thought to myself, LaRue doesn't have a key to his prison, but I've got my own key.
Which brings us to Marcel, a young woman living inside the prison of her own mind.
Marcel was a bit different. I think the whole country's sympathy lay with Marcel.
On the stand, 2 years younger than LaRue, shy and quiet, Marcel came across as docile and played up her innocence behind big glasses. Her style a stark contrast to the high goth get-ups of the rest of EPD. She looked almost demure, her hair neatly pulled into a French braid, almost as if she grew up in a pastoral setting. She'd grown accustomed to saying as little as possible so as not to defy her mother and Cecilia's orders, and hoping against hope for her mother's affection. Here is psychologist Rosalind McNabb.
Marcel still did not really, she still wanted to believe in her mom somehow until the 11th hour. So that unfortunately didn't go too well for her.
News accounts of the trial paint Marcel as clearly subject to profound manipulation. A fearful child.
I think they obviously see their mom adoring Cecilia. So you can imagine this young little girl, I'm going to call her little girl because she was so young when she started to live in Cecilia's house.
Marcel was 10 when her mother met Cecilia, and 13 when she moved in with her and took responsibility for all of Cecilia's needs and those of Cecilia's two young children.
I think she was also thinking she was doing the right thing because the adults all had consensus on this, so this had to be the right thing.
Marcel confided in Rosalind that she had looked up to Cecilia.
Marcel speaks about how she really idolized Cecilia. I mean, she thought that this woman was her hero. She dressed like her. So did most of the members of that group. She thought that whatever she said was amazing. She was her role model. She spoke about her in a speech at school.
Especially after witnessing Michaela's murder, Marcel had no female role models in her life. But just like her brother, Marcel grew up right there on the witness stand, in front of the world.
Marcel was the little shy girl coming into the court. You could definitely see her youthfulness. I don't want to say an innocence, because, I mean, after killing, I don't think you have any more of that left. But she was scared. And I remember seeing this little girl with the big eyes behind the glasses sitting in court. And as the trial progressed, it's as if she evolved herself.
After an entire year of watching the trial unfold and lying on the stand to protect Cecilia, Marcel started to reconsider the implications of staying silent.
She realized there was an aha moment because she still believed, but there was a long period which the prison wardens showed her, like, this doesn't say that in the Bible. And that was the trigger for her.
Marcel started thinking about coming clean to the judge, despite being consistently threatened by her mother and Cecilia.
She actually said to me, my mom said to me, that if you stand up and you tell the truth, we will kill you in Sun City Prison. Cecilia and myself, we will kill you.
Given the conflicting testimony, prosecutors struggled to gain traction on murder charges against Cecilia. No one seemed to tell the same story of what had gone down inside the walls of EPD. According to countless witnesses, Cecilia was said to be in charge. But where was the proof? Here's Detective Suzette Canotze.
Cecilia is the one that's got no blood on her hands. She wasn't involved in any killing, actual killing. She used the people to do it for her.
The judge pointed out that money had clearly been given to her, or as she claimed, donated to her. Zach Valentine and John Barnard said they thought the money they were giving her was going to an orphanage, but her accounts didn't balance out. Cecilia argued from the witness stand that this was not evidence of her involvement in the murders. When the judge pressed her for answers to why others were donating money to her, Cecilia would calmly, dispassionately reply, "You have to ask them." Is the Catholic Church to blame for donations it receives from a mob boss? This was essentially Cecilia's legal argument. It may not have been legally sound, but it was effective. It confused the question of culpability and guilt. According to Cecilia's recollection, people just did things for her. That was their choice. Another reason it was hard for prosecutors to assign blame to Cecilia was that there was no clear structure in EPD. There was no clear chain of command, no contracts between them, and no evidence of direct kill orders. And so, if someone testified that Cecilia told them to kill for her, she simply refuted it. That is, until the puzzle pieces, which had so stubbornly refused to come together, were picked up by Marcel.
She realized a mistake mid-trial and she decided to actually come forward with the truth.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
When Marcel Stein took the witness stand in May of 2019, she laid the pieces of the puzzle out for the courtroom with the breathless ease of someone who'd seen it all.
Before she was supposed to testify, her stepmother phoned me and said that Marcel wanted to change her plea. And I said, no, it's too late now to change her plea. The only thing she can do now is go and tell the truth.
She painted a clear picture for the judge. It was a remarkable moment in the proceedings.
I don't want to call it a testimony because it wasn't really a testimony. It wasn't planned. It wasn't a confession, like a formal confession. She just decided she's going to tell the court now what she knows.
Once again observing, Jana Marks noticed a change in Marcel as she mustered up the courage to speak her truth in front of the judge.
I remember 2-3 days prior to that, she suddenly started to apply some makeup. Suddenly, this little girl with the big eyes, the scared eyes, scared of Cecilia, definitely scared of her mother, evolved into a woman making up her own mind.
During Marcel's riveting speech, her brilliant mind was on full display.
She tried to play the child card to get a lesser sentence, but the judge didn't fall for that. Because when she started fighting with her own advocate in court in front of the judge and telling the judge what the advocate was supposed to do, the advocate saw that this girl is very, very clever.
By advocate, Ben means Marcel's lawyer, not to be confused with Rosalind McNabb, the child advocate we've been hearing from. It was clear Marcel had read up on the law and knew her rights.
It was quite difficult to convince the judge that this was someone with a high IQ but very low EQ.
IQ being logistic intelligence and problem solving, and EQ referring to emotional awareness, being able to identify, evaluate, express, and control emotions. And
that she really was emotionally manipulated and that she really believed in this astral travel. And everything that Cecilia had told her, and she felt as if she couldn't get away, and that she was being watched. And then also doing everything that her mom wanted.
The judge then had a choice. After observing how smart she was, he could take her savvy as a sign that she might be able to work her way out of the victimization she'd suffered, or he could use it against her. He chose the latter. He claimed she had ample opportunity to reach out to an adult at school during her time spent living with Cecilia, and that she had the option to come forward, as her brother had, but she chose not to.
And that's why he also sentenced her to life imprisonment.
Alectus Perdeus was found guilty on June 3rd, 2019.
This was an elaborate conspiracy. Various
fraud. About 6 weeks later, on August 19th, they were sentenced.
The murder of Natasha Berger, the murder of Joy Bonzaia, the murder of Reginald Bendixson, the murder of Michaela Valentine, Peter Mayer, John Mayer, Jared Jackson, Glenn McGregor, Anthony Schofield, Kevin McAlpine, Joanna Latigan. All the deceased were innocent and did not deserve to die.
Cecilia Stein was given 13 life sentences plus 152 years for 11 murders. Zach Valentine, 8 life sentences plus 66 years for 7 murders. Marcel Stein, now 21 years old, was served 7 life sentences plus 144 years for 8 murders.
At the end of the day, I got 39 life sentences and more than 2,000 years imprisonment for these people.
So while the judge took into consideration her age and all the manipulation, Marcel coming forward with the truth didn't really do her much good in terms of sentencing. After an entire life of being conditioned to not trust yourself and your own instincts, the courage that Marcel must have had to find in herself is staggering.
I do know that Miranda didn't really love her kids. You can see that from her just giving Marcel to Cecilia as some sort of prize.
I asked Miranda about this, her upbringing, and her relationship to her own children. Again, the noise inside the prison visiting room was so bad that this is an actor reading her response.
You know, we grew up in a generation.
We grew up in a generation where our parents, my parents, never until today ever told me that they loved me. Ever. Or hugged me or anything like that. They would kiss you, mwah, hello, goodbye, you know, but that's it. So I think I was maybe over-loving and overprotective with my children. But they knew I loved them, and I was a good mother.
Throughout our conversation, Miranda spoke highly of Marcel, told me that her daughter was good and had no part in any of the crimes. The judge honored Marcel's fear for her life and her wishes not to be anywhere near her mother and Cecilia. He sentenced Marcel not to Sun City, but to a prison in Pretoria. Whether Miranda admits it or not, her self-proclaimed affectionless upbringing has been passed down. Well, I think it's safe to say that Marcel and LaRue's experience was quite a bit more severe than Miranda's circumstances growing up. But all of this seems to be the product of a corrupt and broken system. Old, antiquated traditions, ones that victimize and suppress, they're dangerous. Forcing human beings into social constructs will cause them to lash out. Here is our resident scholar, Dr. Nikki Falkoff.
We could even speculate that, you know, her character as this kind of idealized mom, teacher, perfect suburban white lady, there's something fundamentally flawed in that characterization of white South African women. I mean, it's possible that her identity, rather than protecting her from this kind of manipulation, actually made her even more vulnerable to it.
The longing to belong is a very basic primal impulse, one of protection and self-preservation. We need each other to survive. This was even true for the followers of Queen Havoc.
They didn't feel that they belonged anywhere, didn't feel wanted by society, and then they meet this woman, and she just say, you're welcome. Everyone is welcome here. If no one wants you, I want you. And I think that was extremely satisfying for everyone. They wanted to be part of a group. They wanted to stay part of a group.
By the time LaRue was grown, he was thoroughly conditioned to be rewarded for demonstrating brutality. His self-worth became tied to how savagely he could kill another person.
You would think the one side of him would rebel and run away, but yet it's like he surrenders, he submerges, you know? And he wanted to prove himself. That's why he did the murders in that way. He wanted to show that he's worthy, and it's actually sad, you know?
All this is to say that it's important to consider the walls that each of us have created around our hearts and minds and who we choose to reside within them. Cults are scary, sure, but they are not altogether rare or really even counterculture when you think about it. It's right there in the word, culture. It's in our nature to cultivate community. These concepts came alive in Cecilia's own story. When on the stand, she claimed psychological and physical abuse as a child. And when my producing partner Jennifer and I went into the prison again to meet Cecilia, she elaborated. This was a moment I had been thinking about and anticipating for over 2 years. I have to admit, I wanted to meet Cecilia Stein. Remember, prison in South Africa differs greatly from the United States. There were no shackles, no cuffs, nothing really protecting us from the prisoners in the room. Even Maritska described how she and LaRue would sneak kisses during the visiting hours when the guards turned their backs. We'll go into more detail in our bonus episode about what it was like being in Cecilia's presence. But for the moment, we'd like to just share with you some of Cecilia's reflections in an attempt to answer some questions posed at the beginning of this podcast. What drives our inherent human need to belong to something? And how do our relationships serve to satiate this primal desire? We asked her to share her thoughts on the human condition and our need for connection. To be clear, what you're hearing this time is not an actor. This is Cecilia Stein's actual voice.
I think the only people that really love you unconditionally is your children. The way they look at you, the way they trust you unconditionally, the way they would hug you and wait for you to go with them because they're too scared to walk down a dark hallway. Or, you know, to really feel unconditionally loved is by your children. You can say your parents or whatever, but you look at some people's parents, parents can be vindictive.
Colonel Christelle Boysen shared this anecdote from Cecilia's childhood.
What we've been told is that Cecilia was actually one of a twin, a boy twin. He died in vitro. So when she grew up, her mother blamed her for the death of her twin. So she grew up with this, I have the power to kill. I started killing when I was in my mother's womb.
Growing up under such serious maternal blaming, plus whatever else might have happened to her as a young person, bred a deep distrust of others. She shared with us a terrifying memory from when she was only 15.
I was 15. Me and my girlfriend at the time were at a friend of ours, brother's 21st birthday party. About 2 o'clock in the morning, we decided, okay, it's time for us to go. And everybody was drinking, so we said, you know what, we can walk. On our way home, we went through a shopping center's parking area. The guy came walking up to us, asking me for a lighter. So I bent down, obviously, going through my pockets, looking for a lighter. And as I looked up, he was standing there with a knife. So this guy's robbing us. Without thinking, I grabbed the blade of his knife. My hand went to my pocket. Next thing I know, my knife was in my hand, and the next thing it was in his throat.
It's hard to believe the things that Cecilia says. Still, if this first murder did in fact happen when she was 15, it looks like it created a butterfly effect that would show her just how fragile a human life is.
When everything was done and he was lying in the parking lot and I'm sitting on the sidewalk, I'm looking at this guy and thinking, this is impossible. It can't be that easy for a human being to die. Obviously, all the emotions you go through afterwards, your body goes into shock, you're nauseous, you want to pass out, you want to throw up all at the same time. You're scared, you're confused, and you realize how easy it is for someone to die, how easy it is for you to take someone's life.
Based on what Cecilia shared with us about her perspective on humanity, it seems that she is, bereft of hope.
I personally think that humans is, I don't know, a species that does not deserve to survive. If you look at the way we act, the way we behave towards each other, I would think twice about killing a spider or something like that. A spider is there, it does its job, it doesn't judge you, it doesn't lie to you, it doesn't steal from you, it just does what it has to do and then goes on its merry way. Insects, animals, completely natural. It's humans that are unnatural.
It also seems Cecilia's longing to belong was so strong, her need for attention so robust, and her sense of connection so lacking early on, that she created an environment in which those around her would never leave her. A kind of emotional symbiosis to make sure they'd stick around. In her mind, she was making them feel welcome and feeding their desire for some kind of greater purpose. She preyed on that.
I think we all want to belong somewhere. You know, feel like you're part of something. Feel like you have a purpose.
And Marinda learned a lot from her. The two have a deep reverence for each other, even today. Marinda especially still idolizes Cecilia.
God put in my heart that she loves me just as much as I love her. It's like we are twins, that type of connection. Not the same person, like a soul tie.
Twins. How's that for irony?
Me and Marinda are close, you know. We're good friends. We have a relationship where we can tell each other anything. And, you know, just by a look, you know, in what mood someone is. She's the first person I tell when something's wrong. She's an amazing person. She's really an amazing person.
Marinda's love perhaps went a bit further.
I joked about it, you know, like discovering that I'm also gay. It's a pity we couldn't have gone for each other, but it would feel like incest. Just because I think she's the perfect person, you know? It's kind of, if we could date, that would have been the perfect type thing. But sadly, it would just be wrong.
While this information does ground these two terrifying people for us, it does not by any means excuse their actions. Neither exhibits a scrap of remorse.
I felt this compassion with these people. I felt very sorry for them. But what can I say? I'm not sorry that I killed them.
4 years into her 13 life sentences, Cecilia still denies any involvement with the murders.
I'm not a person that really regrets things easily. I regret what I put my children through. I regret the impact it has on them. But I think I've learned a lot in that, you know? So I don't have a lot of regrets in my life.
Through everything, this case, these people, this story that has been a part of my life for over 3 years, I keep coming back to this hard but simple truth that good people can do horrible things and that bad people are capable of good. That's not to oversimplify the lives of the victims and their families. The sheer destruction that Cecilia Stein and Electus Perdeas caused is staggering. But the fact remains, we all have a dark side. Two wolves that live inside each of us. Whichever one we feed takes over, the choice is ours. We get to choose how far we'll go for belonging. To quote the great Joan Didion, we tell ourselves stories in order to live. Cecilia Stein told her followers stories in order to kill. She fed them these stories in order to shroud them in a sense of purpose. She used these stories to satiate the primal need to belong. Stories have power. They feed the wolf. They are the way we navigate our world. So I suppose this forces the question, what stories are you telling yourself? Thank you all for joining us on this adventure. It has truly been an honor to be your host. Be good to each other and yourselves. Join us for our bonus episode. You'll hear more unbelievably candid moments with Cecilia Stein herself and an update on the current investigation against the corrupt cops, as well as behind-the-scenes conversations about our adventures in South Africa. Queen Havoc and Her Murder Cult is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcasts. Queen Havoc is hosted and created by me, Kurt Kubicek. Produced and written by Jennifer Tacchini, Julia Kriskow, and Kurt Kubicek. Lead producer is Julia Kriskow. Story editor is Zarin Burnett. Senior producer is Amelia Brock. Production manager is Daisy Church. Original music composed by Claire Campbell. Editing, sound design, and scoring by Jesse Neiswanger. Additional editing by Miranda Hawkins. Associate producers are Dashin Moodley and Jermaine Kriher. Additional producing by Ben Melman. Fact-checking by Dennis Webster. Recording engineers are Graham Gibson, Clay Hillenberg, and Josh Hook. Brenda Stein was read by Angelique Pretorius. Rhea Grunewald's testimony is read by Madeline Page. Executive producers are Virginia Prescott, L.C. Crowley, Brandon Barr, Jennifer Tacchini, and Kurt Kubicek. We want to thank all of those who so generously welcomed us in South Africa and shared their stories. We're incredibly grateful to you all. We also want to acknowledge how traumatic these events are for the victims and their families. Please respect their privacy. If you or someone you know has been affected by cult behaviors, there are resources available, including Voices for Dignity at ChristineMurray.com.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.